Welcome to Mountain Money. Today is Monday, September 30th, 2024. I'm Kevin Kennedy. I am not joined by Roger Goldman, but we recorded a couple of sessions, which is fantastic. Anyway, so today on Mountain Money, we have Michael Steinbach, head of financial crimes and fraud at Citi. We'll take a look at some present scams that are out there. Some of you may have experienced, and how to stay aware and hopefully avoid becoming a victim. We have Michael on tape with that. After that, we have Bryce Radiman. He opened up Spitz a few weeks ago out in Kimball Junction. He's going to share his insights into running a successful chain of restaurants in multiple states. And he's going to let us know which items on the menu are the most popular. Finally, we have Logan Jones-Olson and Kristen Rocher. They discuss their grand opening of Upgrade Labs. We'll hear about biohacking and all the high-tech equipment they use over there. And that equipment uses AI, and that helps you become a better you. All this and more on Mountain Money. Stay tuned.
Fraudsters continue to become ever more creative. Individuals here in the Park City area have recently been the target of some pretty sophisticated fraud efforts. So what kinds of tricks do these fraudsters have up their sleeves, and what should people do to protect themselves? We're lucky to be joined today by Michael Steinbach. He is the Global Head of Financial Crimes and Fraud Prevention at Citibank. Good morning, Michael, and thanks for coming, joining us on Mountain Money.
Good morning, Roger. Glad to be here.
Let's start with a little bit of an introduction. Can you explain a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. As the title, as you suggested, I'm the Head of Financial Crime and Fraud Prevention at Citi, a global financial institution. Essentially, my job is to keep bad actors, criminals, outside of our walls, help prevent our customers, our clients, and of course, Citi from being victimized by fraudsters, criminals.
Good. Now, how big of a problem are financial scams in the U.S. today?
Yeah, scams in particular have been a growing threat for a number of years. It's hard to kind of visualize or understand. I'll throw out some of the numbers, but I'm not sure if it's going to mean much initially. So the FBI or FTC have said that fraud has increased to about 10 to 12 billion a year, about a 10 to 14% year over year increase. But that's hard to get. It's hard to kind of understand. But when you think about it more broadly, over the last 5 years, this problem has continued to grow. There's been about an 80% increase in complaints, but about a 260% increase in losses over a five-year trend. And again, just to make it a little bit more bringing it back home, so to speak, about 1 in 10 Americans are going to fall victim to some type of fraud or scam. That's greater than any other type of crime in the United States. Car theft, burglaries, assaults. The most likely crime that you are going to be a victim of in the United States is scams.
And where are these scammers located?
They're all over the map. So we've got scammers that are located in the United States. We've got scammers that are located offshore. Some are organized. Some of them have traded in their violent crime habits for these white collar scams. So there's no, you can't really pinpoint where. They're all over the map.
That 10% number is astounding, but as I'm sitting here, I know I've been a victim of one and Kevin's been a victim of one. So I guess it's not all that uncommon. Let's talk about some of the big ones that that scammers use. For example, how do they use like transfer mechanisms like Zelle?
Yeah, and you brought up a good point, Roger. When you say that you and Kevin have also been victims, in most cases, when we talk to Americans, about 90% of Americans say they are able to understand and fend off financial scams. So when I talk to Americans, they say, no, I got this. But of that 90%, 27% admit to have fallen victim to fraud or scams. So when you talk about what's trending today, what's the biggest? It's money movement fraud. So Zelle, wires, Venmo, any type of money movement that is instantaneous, it's a great convenience for Americans, for us. You know, we like the convenience of being able to move money instantaneously. But guess what? Fraudsters also like it because when that money is moved, it's not reversible. Mm. So just like when you hand somebody a wad of cash and it's gone, when you hand somebody money through a money movement channel such as Zelle, it's gone. There's no way for the bank or law enforcement to claw it back.
So give us some of the scenarios that typically arise in terms of a Zelle-related or a wire-related scam.
Yeah, so you need to think of it from the perspective of really at the nut and bolts level, all of the scenarios are somewhat similar. The wrappings or the dressing around the scam is what changes. So in all instances, the criminal is trying to gain your confidence. Maybe that's through an investment scheme. The criminal says, hey, I've got a great return on investment through cryptocurrency. Maybe the scam is through romance via the internet. Maybe it's through some charity that you favor, some political contribution. It's all wrapped around the same scenarios, which is gain the confidence and then get you to move money to whatever the scenario is, whether it's to fund an investment, whether it's for furtherance of a romance scam, whether it's for contributing to some type of charity. But they've gained your confidence, they've moved money, you've moved money voluntarily, and then they're gone.
So it is an econ man.
It's absolutely. It's today's con man in the digital world.
And have you heard some stories where this has actually been successful in large dollar amounts by people you would otherwise think of as sophisticated?
Yeah, I often get the retort, hey, you know, scams or fraud or are the problem for somebody who's not intellectually sophisticated mm-hmm. or is not educated. And that's absolutely not the case. I have talked to victims who are worth millions and millions, and I've talked to victims who are paycheck to paycheck. The fraudsters are extremely good, and they've honed their skills over years in getting your confidence, getting you to believe. And in some cases, it's a little bit of a bait and switch. You will send some money, you will get a return, and you say, wow, this is really working. So then you send more money, and then eventually you're hooked, and you send so much, then they walk away.
And once, as you said before, you mentioned you talked to a lot of these victims. If the money's moved with a Zelle or a wire, there's not a lot you can do to help people after the fact, is there?
No, it's difficult after the fact because by design, some of these money movement channels are designed to be real time. In fact, that's what customers want. They want real time money movement channels. That's great for their convenience, but it's also, again, good because from a fraud perspective, once the fraudster's got it, there's no turning back. And so you have to be very careful as a consumer. You have to really know who you're sending your money to. And that's probably the most important advice I could give. Where's that money going? How did you identify that email or that bank account information? Did some unsolicited email come into you? Have you verified the information where you're sending the money? So most importantly, that money's gone. So you have to verify, know who you're sending your money to.
Or go old school and write a check and drop it in USPS.
I would say check losses are on the rise as well.
Oh,
fraudsters
oh, wow.
are stealing checks out of the mail and taking away people's hard-earned money that same way. What I would suggest is that, look, electronic transfers of money are convenient and they can be extremely safe if you follow some rules. First rule is, know who you're sending the money to. So for instance, like let's say you are closing on a house, and this is a common scenario, and as part of the closing, you are going to be wiring money to a bank or a financial institution or a lawyer as part of the closing. And a day or two before, you get an email and it says, here's your wiring instructions. Here's the account number, here's the email, et cetera, et cetera. You should not just say, oh, I got the email and wiring instructions, because fraudsters will often get in the middle of that conversation, spoof the email address from the legitimate closing agent, banker, lawyer, et cetera, and send you fictitious or fraudulent wiring instructions. So when you get those instructions, going back to my comment, know who you're speaking to. So accept that, then pick up the phone, not the number that's associated with the email, but the number that you know that you have for the lawyer, for the closing agent, for the bank, and say, hey, I just want to confirm the closing instructions. Can you read to me the closing instructions? And then you've got that two-factor authentication right there. So when you're thinking about how you are going to protect yourself in the age of digital money transfers, which can be safe, you just need to exercise patience in common sense.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sitting here listening to you. If you think about it, the MLS is going to show a sale as pending. And that sort of gives the fraudster the information they need to try to get in the middle of the transaction, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Or the fraudsters may have hacked into or had access to a real estate agent's website or an email. So they may have, you just don't know. They spend a lot of time. Again, the number I threw out, 10 to 12 billion, we know is a small figure. It's probably about 5% of actual losses. So the number's probably 250 billion or so. That's a lot of money. So fraudsters will spend significant amounts of effort trying to get access to systems to help start the fraud.
Okay, so you mentioned the first and most important thing to do is know who you're sending it to. Are there other sort of basic precautions that you were advising people to take?
Yeah, there's one up front, even before know who you're sending money to. And that's whether you're talking about the old school con man, which Kevin mentioned earlier, or you're talking about a digital era con man. And that is, if you didn't take the call, make it, right? So don't take the call, make it. So let me expand that out.
Yeah.
Anything incoming, whether you get an unsolicited knock on your door, an unsolicited telephone call, physical mail, email, text, if you didn't initiate that, anything unsolicited, don't just hang up, disconnect, and then go find another route to make that connection. So again, it's very simple. In today's world, the con man needs to initiate a relationship, and that relationship is always initiated unsolicited. So any type of unsolicited incoming communication, phone, in person, email, text, stop it right there, disconnect. If you want to have a relationship and you believe that's a legitimate entity, find the contact information through a Google search or through the information you have on the back of your credit card, and then contact them and say, hey, did you call me? Did you send me an email? Did you knock on my door? That's first and foremost. If of all the things we talk about, if you always remember that, don't accept anything unsolicited, you'll be much further along in terms of protecting yourself.
You know, the quality of the scammers, as you mentioned, grows increasingly sophisticated. An acquaintance of mine recently got a phone call that from his, quote, big bank security department, except it wasn't. And it started a process that he's engaged in because they said, you know, your accounts are being threatened. And it started a really ugly and complicated process that came very close to leading to a substantial loss. So, you know, your point about something unsolicited, if I get a phone call that says I'm from big bank security department, there's nothing wrong with hanging up the phone and calling back, right?
Absolutely. In fact, my daughter, just like your example, my daughter got a incoming phone call, and on the caller ID, it said the name of her bank, and it was the actual number that she knows and that she has called in the past. Well, scammers and fraudsters have cyber tools. They can spoof the incoming data. They can spoof the caller ID. And so even in that instance, she hung up. She then contacted the bank through the number she had and verified. And sure enough, it was a scam. This was only a month ago. So it doesn't matter what you think you see coming in. Don't accept anything unsolicited. The scams today are significantly more sophisticated than they were, even a dozen years ago, where you could look at the email or the phone call and it just didn't seem right. There were spelling errors. There were grammar errors. How the speaking, the conversation was off. Now they are very, very good. And AI, by the way, Gen AI has helped the fraudsters create much more realistic scenarios. So go back to my original point. Don't accept anything incoming.
Perfect. I try to explain that to my daughter as well. Now, can you explain how remote access scams work?
Yeah, it's what's scary about remote access scams. So it's the same scenario up front. Somehow the incoming caller, person who's going to help you, has gained your confidence. You may have a computer glitch or you may be having problems with something going on. And so they say, okay, so I can help you out. Mm-hmm. I need you to give me remote access to your computer. Mm-hmm. Now, the only way bad actors can get access to the computer is if you enable them. So when you give them and initiate remote access, that gives the bad actor, pretending to be a tech rep or some other legitimate individual, access to your computer. That fraudster can now move around your computer and then act as you on the computer. So it's a very sinister scam, because not only can they take advantage with you on the call, they can be pulling up information that's stored on your computer that you don't even know they're having access to. Or you may walk away and never have disconnected that access. And now they can act as you, they can sell stocks, they can move money, they can conduct Zeller wires, they can gather more personal information on you, bank account information. This can be a long, drawn out piece. So remote access scams are extremely sinister in that the person has complete access to everything that's on your computer.
And who's the victim of these remote access scams? Is it the elderly? Is it kids?
Yeah. When you look at the list of victims by age demographics, you can see there are victims from those under 20 and those greater than 60. Now, when you look at the dollars lost, of course, there's a lot more dollars lost to the elderly because that's where the source of wealth is. Mm-hmm. But I would say in some instances, the young can be more vulnerable than the elderly. Hmm. And why is that? Because where the elderly may not have a comfortable understanding and how to use a computer, sometimes the youth, and I use my daughter as an example, are so comfortable that they kind of bypass all that nonsensical pain in the butt security protocols. And they treat the computer and the text and the phone like an extension of their voice. So they have a tendency to move those annoying security protocols out of the way. So they at times can be just as victimized. So I always tell people, look, it's not about age demographics. It's not about economics. Anybody can be a victim of fraud.
Recently, you're seeing more and more suggestions from various websites to enable two-factor authentication. Can you talk a little bit about that and what your perspective is on how important it is?
Yeah, it's extremely important. The fraudsters, the criminals are looking for an in. And if they've compromised one piece of data, right, maybe an account number, a password, and that's all that you have standing between them and your money, that's a challenge. What we suggest is that you have a layered approach. You know, be a good partner with your bank, your financial institution. Create protection. So if instead of just one factor, there's a second factor, a multi-factor authentication, it takes that much more for the fraudsters to get in. So to break it down more simply, instead of just saying, okay, look, username and password or face or voice, require that an OTP or a push notification be sent to you to confirm, hey, is this you accessing the account? There's lots of different variations of two-factor or multi-factor authentication, but at the end of the day, it's saying in its simplest form, there's one set of gates to get through, but before we give you access to all the information, there's another set of gates that you must go through. And that's what's so important about two-factor, multi-factor. Make sure you've got strong, unique username and passwords, and then set up, when offered, multi-factor every time. Again, it's a little bit inconvenient. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting access to your information in 5 seconds, it'll take 15 seconds. So it's a small price to pay, multi-factor authentication, to create more secure environments for your most precious accounts.
We just chatted a moment ago about the old scams and how they'd come in with an email with poor grammar, misspellings, the reply to address was completely whacked. What are some big red flags that our listeners should look for with AI taking over? I mean, is it possible for, I know they do these video spoofs where AI can impersonate someone's like mid-20s son or daughter and say, hey, you know, I've been arrested with a Zoom call. You know, I've been arrested. Can you send money to this address? My bail is 10 grand or something. Is that possible? It's a dumb question.
I can tell you probably on a weekly basis, I get some type of text or email that's a scam. It's a phishing expedition. My wife has received those type of calls going back several years when it was just a call on the phone saying, hey, you know, we've got your daughter. These are extremely emotional situations, but you've got to follow that initial advice I gave you. If it's incoming unsolicited, verify, right? You know, in reality, let's take a step back. Here in the United States, in reality, are there actual instances where you've seen on the news, heard in the paper, even in the single digits, instances where people are being kidnapped and they're calling into legitimate, that just doesn't happen. So those scenarios, although emotionally charged, you need to step back and verify. You know, that could be hanging up and calling your son or daughter, your loved one on their phone, texting them, hey, where are you at? Because those scenarios take advantage of an important factor. In fact, all frauds take advantage of an important factor, and that's the sense of urgency. Hey, you've got to send this money right now to keep them safe. Hey, your account has been hacked. If you don't send the money or transfer the money within the next 10 minutes, it's going to be lost. A sense of urgency where the fraudsters are attempting to get you to act with haste is a huge red flag that you need to be aware of.
Okay, Michael, we've appreciated your spending time with us. Any sort of final words of wisdom you have for our listeners before we go?
Yeah, I appreciate being on here. As I mentioned, the dollars are significant. You will likely be a victim, or they will attempt to come after you. So just utilize common sense. Educate yourself. You know, read about them. Understand the latest trends that are going on. And then when they come to you, don't take it. Don't take the call. Make the call. Don't accept anything incoming. And then just monitor your systems, your accounts, your passwords, and exercise prudence.
We've been speaking with Mike Steinbeck. He is the global head of financial crimes and fraud prevention at Citibank. Thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll be right back after this.
We're back with Mountain Money. And if you've been listening for a while, you know that I like food. Love chatting with people with restaurants. And we're joined by Bryce Radiman, just opened Spitz out in Kimball Junction. Good morning, Bryce. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So I gotta see, what is your food and beverage background that made you want to open up a restaurant?
Yeah, that's simple. I grew up in Park City. Truly, I worked almost every hospitality job there was to work in Park City, from fast food to fine dining, front of house, back of house, working the chairlifts up at Deer Valley. I was a lifty there. I was also at fancy hotels. So I really saw a holistic view of hospitality. And when I was in college, I lived in Spain and found a street food called doner kebab, which means rotating meat in Turkish. It's like a gyro or shawarma. And with my kind of background in Park City growing up, I said, I want to take the street food and elevate it and kind of create a concept that's between fast food and fine dining. And that's kind of where everything culminated from the experience I had growing up.
And where did you open the first Spitz location?
Just about half a mile away from my college in Los Angeles. I went to Occidental College. And I opened that. We leased the space 2 weeks after graduating from college. So I was 21 years old, and the year was 2005. And we opened 10 months after signing that lease. And man, it's been almost 20 years since that first store.
Yeah, it's very good. I love going to Spitz.
Awesome, thank you.
So this is restaurant number what for you?
So this is restaurant, but the Park City location is number 24.
24, yeah. In what states?
We are all over the Mountain West, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, California, Oregon, Minnesota. We just opened one on the East Coast in Washington, D.C. area. So it's continued to grow and expand through a franchise model. We do that not because I want to grow in a cookie cutter sense, actually quite the opposite. So franchise is actually somewhat of a dirty word for me, but we use that model because I believe that local ownership of a restaurant specifically is absolutely crucial to maintaining that community standard that makes a restaurant successful. So that is why we did that. You know, I opened the original four stores in Los Angeles, and we started the process of franchising by a friend I grew up with here in Park City wanted to bring it out to Salt Lake. And we investigated all the different ways that might work and decided that local ownership made the most sense. And he opened the first franchise out here about 10 years ago. And then we built up to about 11 For a while, and then in the last 2 years, we pretty much doubled in size. So I've been a full nomad, living around the country, meeting new franchisees, helping build the locations. You know, it's been quite a hands-on project, but one that's really ultimately very rewarding. It was so great to bring it back to Park City. You know, everybody would always ask me, when are you coming here? When are you coming here? The answer was till we found the right location. And, you know, when that location popped up, which is right next to Whole Foods with that great patio corner unit, we just said, this is it. So it was worth the wait for sure.
And Bryce, is this unit a franchise?
This is, yes.
Okay, so
yes.
Who's the owner of this unit?
This is Brett Chamberlain, who owns three of the stores down in Salt Lake City. He owns the Lehigh, Draper, and Cottonwood locations. And he found this location and brought it to my attention. And we said, yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
So how many of the stores do you actually own?
I own the four stores in L.A. still, mm-hmm. corporate-owned. And then we own one in Portland, Oregon.
So operating a franchise as a corporate headquarters, I don't think we've ever had the chance to talk to somebody who does that. How much of your time is spent sort of developing sort of guidance for your various franchisees, interacting with your franchisees, policies and procedures, those kinds of things?
Yeah. Well, as I said, you know, we've really grown double in size in the last couple of years and have seen how important it is to have more and more, unfortunately, corporate structure, which, you know, I see why corporations have to have a corporate structure. Not that we never had them before. I'm just very precise with making sure we don't end up having things that get done that don't need to get done, you know, just being done for corporate management's sake. So that's been the balance to strike. I've continued to promote people from within our company who have been with us for 10 plus years. Those are all the people coming into the franchise roles. For trainers, quality assurance, site visits, things like that. So it's provided a really great upward mobility for the people that have put the work in at the company. And the bottom line is all those procedures, everything you're talking about, they require oversight. You know, there's only so much you can do by email or Zoom. So we really have had to build a team where we're going out and doing site visits, follow-ups. That is the only way to keep the quality there.
Now, can you briefly walk me through me becoming a franchisee? Let's say I wanted to open one. What are my requirements to even speak with you about that? And then what is the next step? Do you come and make sure everything's in order?
Yeah, absolutely. We have I hired a sales team, which kind of helps vet people both financially, professional background, you know, background checks. So you kind of got to get through all of those. Then we set up a discovery call with me. We kind of meet each other, see if that works, and then we meet in person. But first and foremost, we need to make sure you want to open a store in an area that makes sense to us, where we have a lot of data analytics on is the customer base that we want there. And then also, I pretty much try to not sell you. Actually, I work very hard to tell you, why would you do this? Which is funny because when my business plan I wrote here, I shopped it around to people like Bill White, other restaurateurs here. And almost everyone said the same thing to me. Why would you do this? A restaurant's a very silly way to make money. And I said, yeah, but I'm going to do it anyways. I pretty much asked those questions to any franchisee too, because it's not a way to make money in a quick buck type sense. There's a lot of manual input and a lot of labor that goes into it. And the only way that you end up making money in a long run sense is if you really enjoy hospitality. Mm-hmm. So it should not be seen as a quick investment that might be passive. And so I very much try to dispel any notion of that to any future franchisee. But if I look at them and I tell them all of this and I say, but do you love hospitality? Like I love hospitality. You know, growing up again in Park City, I got to experience all that. I love creating atmospheres where people are enjoying themselves. I love good lighting. I love good music. I love good food. I love all of those things. And that allows me to make decisions in a long-term sense that help support the business. Because if you operate on a short-term pinching pennies type thing, you're going to make the wrong decisions. And so that's kind of where you come.
I want to sort of do a segue from the, how rigid is the franchise model in terms of the menus? And what's the menu like?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I've also dealt with this, so I asked franchisees, now you want to franchise us because you want what we're doing, right? There's no point in doing this unless you already like what we're doing. So we do allow for, you know, input on certain things, but the reason you franchise is because you want what our menu is to offer. And so it is a mix of Mediterranean street food. I mean, that is the name Spitz, which refers to the big vertical broilers, the big spits of meat. Again, gyro or gyro, as people say, shawarma, tacos al pastor, they all refer to the same thing of these rotating spits of meat. We do these in lavash wraps, multiple different flavor styles. We have amazing quinoa bowls, salads, entire vegan menu, gluten-free menu. We have new chicken wings, which are insanely great. Our French fries are award-winning. We have street cart fries, which are basically loaded French fry. We have craft beers, homemade sangrias, pretty much provide that right in the middle, which I knew Park City needed so much. You don't need to go sit down at fine dining, but you don't need to compromise by going to fast food. You know, we really provide an experience that you can have a date night, you can bring your family. You know, we have board games and all sorts of stuff for the kids to play. So we kind of try to go right in the middle and have a food that's familiar, you know, but it is our own brand of food, which is why our model has worked to expand, because it is Mediterranean, but you can't really find what we do anywhere else. And that's what we kind of concentrate on, making sure we continue to do better and better.
Now, you mentioned craft beer. Do you have local beers, you know, local to the restaurants where the franchises have opened
absolutely
up?
Absolutely. Yeah. Every location has local craft beers. That's a big, big one for us. So we also hand design. You know, we'll never be able to grow into something massive and by on purpose, because each of our locations is designed by hand. We do not want them to feel like a cookie cutter location, and they don't. So every store has custom art on the walls. And this is, when I say art, I'm not talking about hanging a piece of art. The entire interior is a piece of artwork done by my partner and street designer from LA, who I met 20 years ago just by happenstance, who's now a full equity partner with us, Devin Paulson. He's a shout out to you, buddy. He's an amazing artist, and he really does hand design each of these stores. So they feel like a Spitz brand, but each one encapsulates the city and community that they're in, as well as the local ownership. So with craft beer, that's part of it. We want every location to be like part of the community and not feel like any sort of big national chain.
And so what's the number one and the number, what are the number one and two items on the menu?
Everyone knows a gyro or gyro. A correct pronunciation is gyro. And so that one, we do our own Spitz version of it, and that is by far the most popular. The street cart fries are probably the second one, those loaded fries. Those are definitely the ones to try, but I honestly eat the quinoa bowls the most, because I can't eat French fries and gyros every day. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing too well. Even though ours are good versions of that, everything, I mean, that is what brings people to us, is that even for full flavor items like a gyro or a loaded fry, we're using all ingredients that are made in-house, fresh cut veggies. Like, you can taste that it doesn't feel processed. And that was always how I judged, is our menu where I want it to be? How do you feel after you eat it? Could I go back to work after eating a meal at Spitz? And if my answer is yes, which it usually always is, I say, okay, we're doing it right. And it's not as easy, especially when you're growing. There's a big push for manufacturers to make all your sauces and make things and you ship them. And I've sampled that, and I've time and again said, just like we won't grow too fast because we want each store to be specific to that location, we're also not going to grow so fast that we can't make our own sauces in-house every day, cut our own veggies. That's just going to be the limiter to our growth, and I'm very happy with that, because it's something you taste.
Well, we just spent the last few minutes speaking with Bryce Radiman of Spitz Restaurant out there in Kimball Junction. Bryce, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Good luck to you. And welcome back to Mountain Money. So we all think about making ourselves better, mentally, physically, just everything better in life. This morning, we're joined by Logan Jones-Olson and Kristen Rocher from Upgrade Labs. They just opened out in Kimball Junction. Good morning, Logan. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning. Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Now, what is this? I mean, can you give us a brief description on what Upgrade Labs, a human upgrade center, is and what it does?
Yeah, I can take this one. So the way we think about Upgrade Labs is in three parts. We think about it in recovery, performance, and cognitive enhancement. So we have a bunch of different modalities and high-tech equipment for recovery, like cryotherapy, red light therapy, a lymphatic massage, detox piece of equipment, PEMF, which helps with recovery, back pain, things like that. And then on our performance side, more of the exercise equipment, we have a few pieces of AI exercise equipment. One is an AI bike that measures your heart rate and helps you improve heart rate variability.
Hmm.
And another one is our what we call our AI cheat machine. This is, yeah, we got to love the naming of all the units, right? So the AI cheat machine is an AI adaptive resistance training machine. So this is going into all the professional athletic teams, NFL teams, and basically gets you a more efficient workout that you can't replicate easily in a gym.
No kidding.
I want to touch on the last piece, yep. The cognitive enhancement. We actually have a neurofeedback training program where it's about 30 minutes where you get to train yourself to be able to better and more intentionally bring yourself into the alpha wave state.
Nice. So the going back to the cheat machine, so I can do, you know, 1 minute of workout on a cheat machine instead of a 45-minute mountain bike ride?
So not necessarily 1 minute, but it is good to think about it in those terms. So with Upgrade Labs, we really, the modalities that have been chosen, and in this case that we're talking about, the AI cheat machine, it's all about efficiency. How do you work smarter, not harder, one of Dave Asprey's books that he wrote. That's definitely a theme throughout the center. So not necessarily 1 minute to 45 minutes, but more like 15 minutes to 45 minutes. And an example of how you can do that is, not everyone knows this, but our muscles are actually stronger on the eccentric motion than the concentric. So there's a ton of advanced settings that you can do on this piece of equipment. One of them is, instead of, say, doing a 30-pound curl up and down, you do 30 up and 40 pounds down, something that you can't easily replicate in a gym.
So give us a profile of a typical client or customer. Who comes to you and what do they go through?
I can take that one. So
okay.
The typical client, it's kind of hard to pin down because really it can serve anyone. It can serve anyone from someone that has been going through some kind of chronic pain, like back pain or knee pain, to someone that just had an injury or surgery and wants to recover faster. We have great modalities for that. To anyone like a high-powered exec or someone that's super busy that wants to create those efficiencies instead of going from the gym to a massage to X to Z, you can just come to Upgrade Labs and you can get your workout in, you can get your recovery in, you can work on your brain, and you can do that all much more efficiently all in one roof.
And to some extent, do you actually have individual personal training type experts that help people?
Good question. So we have a staff of 8 plus our general manager, and we intentionally hired people with all kinds of different backgrounds, from your spa background and massage background to also personal training background. So with what we were just talking about a minute ago, the exercise equipment, the AI cheat, we have people that have specific personal training backgrounds to really walk you through how to do this, how to use proper form. And then we really try to tailor it to the client, where if someone is experienced and they've gotten to know the machine, the modality, then, and they want to run on their own, we let them do that. Or someone like my mother that's, you know, not been in the gym and is really going to have a hard time, you know, we'll stick with them every single session for as long as they want.
Now, you mentioned Dave Asprey earlier, and I know this is based on his biohacking books research, I guess, many years from what I understand. So biohacking is hacking one's life, and it sounds like the three different realms that you mentioned take care of all of that. So when you mentioned the cognitive, so your alpha waves, that's when you're stress-free. Is that correct?
Yep, and more clear-minded, better at making decisions. So I'm really excited about that one. You know, all of us run into day-to-day stressors in our lives, mm-hmm. and it's really about being able to control that and stopping and pausing and going like, nope, I'm not going to go into that stressed out mode. I know how, because of the training, to bring myself back to this alpha state and be my best self.
That is incredible. So you, yeah, all right. I can just see, you know, myself just when I'm stressed, if you go through that biofeedback training, then you can just tell yourself, okay, hey, do this, and you release it.
Exactly.
And very so nice. Now what kind of a financial model do you run? Is it a subscription product? Is it a session product? Can you describe a little bit about that?
Yeah, good question. So do you want to take this one, Kristen, or do you want me to?
Yeah, so we are a membership-based model. We do have, like, drop-in prices as well. But depending on the membership, when you break it down, the services cost anywhere from as low as, like, $6 to $14. So it's very, very affordable.
Hmm. And so someone can just pop in, a traveler coming to town to go skiing, they can just quickly pop in, go, I'm feeling stressed. I just, you know, it was a turbulent flight, and they could do the biofeedback?
Yeah, so we want to cater to both audiences, the locals that live here year-round and also the tourism. So we, as Krista mentioned, we have memberships where you can do a monthly membership, quarterly, or an annual to get bigger discounts. And with that membership, you get 36 credits. Okay. And what Kristen was saying with that, the equivalent of that is anywhere from $6 to $14 per service or credit. When you think about going and getting a massage or going and getting X service, people are typically spending $100, $200. And our membership prices are anywhere from $350 a month to $500 a month, which is a little bit of a sticker shock. But when you break it down to that per service, it's actually incredibly cheap.
So let's take that down a level for those of us who are trying to follow it. So let's say I have a $360 a month, a monthly subscription. Okay, I get 36 credits.
Mm-hmm.
What's a credit?
So a credit is a service. So you can either call or book online. And what you would book is you would book a session of that exercise, the AI cheat.
Right.
Or you would book a red charger, our red light therapy bed, or the big squeeze, which is our lymphatic detox massage system. So you're booking each one of those modalities each time.
So so with 36 credits, is that for a month?
Yep.
Okay, and is that, so if I break that down, I could come in 3 or 4 times a week, basically?
Yeah, what we recommend to people that buy the membership mm-hmm. is to come in 3 times a week and do 3 services each session,
mm-hmm.
and that gets you to the 36.
Yeah.
And unlike a gym where, you know, kind of built in the model is for people to sign up and pay and then not come,
mm-hmm.
we're actually incentivizing our staff to make sure that people are using their credits. We really want people to come and use it because they're going to feel the impact. They're going to, you know, be able to bring that good that they're feeling in their lives, and they're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
I did want to touch on the tourism real fast.
Sure, go for it, please.
So that's where we have not the memberships, but we do have a 16-pack of services. You can buy an 8-pack or a single service. So we want to figure out how to, for the tourism crowd that's coming to Park City, Utah in the summer or winter, coming to this high altitude, how do they land or when they arrive here, get acclimated to the environment, get ready for their adventures, whether that's skiing or mountain biking. So one modality that I hadn't mentioned yet is our metabolic trainer, which is basically altitude training. So you can get here and more quickly get adjusted to the altitude here, go hit the slopes, go hit, you know, mountain biking, and then, you know, if you're doing 2, 3, 4 days of that, beating your body up, swing by after, recover, feel better, sleep better, and then go hit hard again.
Well, continuing with Roger's question, and taking into account tourists, who is this for? Is this for the elite athlete who needs to be better than their competition? Or is this, as you said, is it for your mom or you know, anyone in their 60s, 70s? Can everyone find a benefit from this?
Absolutely. It's for everybody. Everybody.
Yeah, I'll just add on to it. I think totally what Kristen's saying, it's for everyone. It's for your elite athlete because this is top-of-the-line, science-backed equipment that we have here. There's over $500,000 worth of equipment in here. So it does cater to that audience. And the beauty of the business model is that it's also bringing it to my mom, your mom, you know, the call it the average person, if you want to call it that, but being able to have access to what is normally available to the rich or the professional athletes. We now all have access to that.
So we've touched a little bit on monthly costs. We've touched a little bit about how much capital you've got in an operation like this. Obviously, a challenge for you is, how are you going to market this to the local community? How are you going to let people know where you are? What are you doing?
Yeah, so, you know, our approach is every traditional manner of marketing, from, you know, online, digital, paid media, organic, paid Google. But really, the crux of it in our minds is have every member have the best experience possible. Mm-hmm. And that is the focus of for Kristen and me and our staff. And when they have a good experience and their lives are changed, they're going to go out and talk about it. We're already hearing stories from our staff, our members, that, you know, someone had sciatica that they've dealt with their whole life. They've done two sessions in our Red Charger that has a specific sciatica program, and it's gone. Like, we're hearing so many of those stories already.
And you've been open since?
August 24th. And if it's okay, I want to note that while we're open on August 24th, we're doing our grand opening October 11th and 12th. On October 11th, we'll have Mayor Nan and Summit County Council Melina Stevens. And then on October 12th, we'll have Dave Asprey in town doing a book signing, meet and greet, and then also a bunch of local vendors participating with prizes, giveaways, and things like that. So,
and where's that at?
That'll be at our location, which is in Redstone next to Petco.
Perfect. Perfect. Now, you'd mentioned, you know, it's kind of like a gym, but not really, but does it hurt? I mean, you know, you go to the gym and you hit the weights pretty hard and, boy, you are hurting. Does this hurt? I mean, can you make it hurt?
So we definitely view ourselves differently than your typical gym. We're not trying to make you hurt. We're trying to help you feel better and recover. So though we have some AI pieces of equipment that can help you work out, it is not intended to have you hurt. And the other pieces of modality that are in for recovery, they should make you feel good.
Nice. So the old adage, no pain, no gain, doesn't exist here. You will have the gain with no pain.
I love that. Exactly.
Nice. You can use it.
Okay. So is this a unique kind of an operation? Are there other similar operations around the country? And is it a franchise, or are you guys independent?
Yeah, good question. So it is a franchise. We're the sixth location to open. And it's not unique in the sense that you can find most of what we have in one place or another. Like, even in Park City, you know, there's some places that might have a red light bed. We don't have a bash, but I can tell you ours is top of the line. You can find other places do cold therapy. You can find onesie twosies kind of all over. But truly, from my understanding, unless we're missing something and we've done a ton of research, it is unique in the sense of this is a one-stop shop to get all of these different recovery modalities, the efficiency of the performance, the exercise, and then the unique neurofeedback training that's offered here.
And do you offer tours if people want to just get a sense? I mean, obviously, we can't really paint a great picture on the radio. We're doing the best we can. But if people want to come in and get a look at things and understand it, is that possible?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah, we offer free intro tours, and that includes like a demo. So we will do a cell health analysis. So an awesome body scan that will tell us how healthy your cells are, where your inflammation lies, your visceral fat, and tons more data. And then we'll show you around the facility, tell you about each piece of modality, and then let you pick what you want to try that day.
Now, you'd mentioned the cold. It's a cryo?
Yep, cryotherapy, yeah.
Nice. And how do you avoid frostbite when you go into a cryo? Because, you know, you can go outside and it's 0 degrees. How cold is the cryo room, and how do you avoid frostbite?
Great question also. It goes up to, or down to, I should say, a negative 175 degrees.
Fahrenheit.
Yes. So what we have for you is a beautiful changing room where we provide you mittens, gloves, wool socks, slippers, different sizes of body wraps and robes, headbands, masks, beanies, and awesome headphones where you get to pick your favorite song to listen to while you dance in the cryo chamber.
I love it. Now, just indulge me on a couple of things. So if I travel, let's say I'm flying back from Europe or something, and crazy jet lag, can I pop in? Is there something there that would help with jet lag?
Yeah, that's a good question. I almost joked if I bring back to the cryotherapy, we just let you go in there and freeze and see how it goes. But no, we really try to take the right precautions with every modality. For the jet lag, absolutely. So something we recommend for jet lag or for tourists coming in is what we call the big squeeze. And this is an FDA-cleared lymphatic detox massage system that has 26 different chambers that's reading how high the pressure is. And what this does is it will detox your lymphatic system just like you would get with a traditional, professional doing a detox massage. So that's a great option for people that have flown in or maybe hit the town too hard the night before. We highly recommend that.
Okay, we just spent a few minutes with Logan and Kristen from Upgrade Labs. And what is the website, Logan?
You can find us at upgradelabs.com and then just click the Park City location.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.